Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I am here today with Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, man. We got a lot of stuff going on.
It is hot here. Is it hot by you?
It's hot in the D.C. area.
Yeah, they said it's 108. The heat index is 108 here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 108 here, but it's warm. It's Alabama in the summer, man. It's going to be warm.
I don't go outside, so I'm good, you know?
Yeah. I was outside a bit today, moving some stuff. I'm moving back into my home office, if someone's watching this on video. And I got my neighbor's a CrossFitter, and he was helping me move this gigantic couch that I have from my office back to my house. And I just watched like four CrossFit people move this couch for me, and they were like, "You don't do anything." And I was like, "Okay, sounds like a great deal. Thanks for the help." They're like former college football players and stuff. It was awesome. So I'm recording from home today, and for the foreseeable future.
Nice.
Rocking with some fiber internet down here in Birmingham. But hey, you know what? We got more stuff to talk about. First of all, I would like to say thank you to our new show partner, Brave New Coin. You know these guys. BraveNewCoin.com. The team at Brave New Coin is partnering with the show, so we're going to promote their stuff and say thank you to them for supporting the show and encourage you to get your crypto news and analysis from the Brave New Coin website and newsletters. I get a Brave New Coin newsletter every day, and then there's like the big weekly newsletter.
It's pretty good, actually.
It is good.
Like, I actually read it, so it says something.
You read yourself sometimes.
Well, yeah, but like the other stuff. I read the other stuff on the website, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's a nice summary of the day. No junk, just good stuff. And yeah, I'm really pleased and happy to have Brave New Coin as a partner for the show. I've been looking for the right fit, and they've got a ton of great products, data products, if you're into that kind of thing, for real-time streaming of price and volume data from 240-plus exchanges. And other stuff, we reference the BLX in this show all the time because it's awesome and a historical record of Bitcoin. So yeah, thanks to Brave New Coin for being a partner, and looking forward to a great relationship with them. And thanks to you, Josh, because I mean, you're the man in this regard, because you've been with Brave New Coin for a long time and you said, hey,
I was merely a catalyst, a liaison.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
so let's get into the news. I mean, there's a little bit of news going on. Since we talked last, the president tweeted about Bitcoin.
I feel like it's been forever.
It's been a couple of weeks since we got together.
The president
tweeted about Bitcoin.
Specifically.
The Fed chair answered questions about Bitcoin. The Treasury secretary had a press conference about Bitcoin. And Congress had hearings about Bitcoin and Libra. Libra is interlaced through all of this crap, and the word shitcoin was brought to the national attention and the congressional record thanks to Congressman Davidson, I think, in asking a question to Meltem Demirer's, however you pronounce her last name. I should figure that out.
I think it's Demirer's.
So yeah, there's been a lot going on.
The president thing, I think, was just a long time coming. Not necessarily his viewpoint, but like his team is involved. What was the guy's name?
Scaramucci?
No, not Scaramucci. He's involved somewhat as well, but Bannon? Steve Bannon. Yeah. Bannon is deeply involved in crypto.
He had some kind of altcoin or something, right?
Yeah, he's got altcoins. He was early. I think he knows like Brock Pierce. The administration knows about crypto, definitely, and maybe not Trump. I don't even think Trump actually tweeted that, like wrote that tweet, just because it sounds good and like the sentences make sense.
Yeah. Okay. So Trump said this: "I'm not a fan of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which are not money, and whose value is highly volatile and based on thin air. Unregulated crypto assets can facilitate unlawful behavior, including drug trade and other illegal activity. Similarly, Facebook's Libra virtual currency will have little standing or dependability. If Facebook and other companies want to become a bank, they must seek a new banking charter and become subject to all banking regulations, just like other banks, both national and international. We have only one real currency in the USA, and it is stronger than ever, both dependable and reliable. It is by far the most dominant currency anywhere in the world, and it will always stay that way. It is called the United States dollar. That was great for several reasons in my mind. One, and mostly for me, is that he would love to see the dollar be weaker, but he's, you know, lauding its strength in this tweet. But I mean, pointing out his hypocrisy is not necessarily an important thing. But yeah, the point is, he freaking tweeted about it.
Yeah, he did. Well, somebody did, and he hit send, or somebody hit send, and he
came from his account, you know.
Whatever. The fact that he's comparing the dollar to Bitcoin as far as illicit activity is hilarious.
It's great.
Obviously there's illicit activity on anything, but clearly, you know, the dollar is the gold standard for illicit activity. So that's just funny.
And really, honestly, Libra brought all this forward as a huge catalyst. Because
big thank you to David Marcus. Big thank you to Mark Zuckerberg, all the people at Facebook.
It's like there was this potential target on Bitcoin that they could have come at with a lot of arguments. And Libra came along, and everybody was like, this is a terrible idea. Not necessarily the idea, but the fact of Facebook's control over it and the lack of trustworthiness. And they were like pointing out all the bad things about the potential control from Facebook and all the stuff with Libra. And like somehow it ended up being a bullish argument for Bitcoin at the same time. Yeah. So it was a fantastic twist. And I did a whole episode where I was mostly conspiracy theorizing with Aaron Lammer of Coin Talk, where we talked about Libra and stuff. So we don't have to dig into every little detail of Libra, but it got this chain reaction going of all this stuff between Trump tweeting, and that's what spawned the press to ask Jerome Powell of the Federal Reserve about it. That's what Steve Mnuchin referenced in his press conference. All that was Libra associated, and then there was kind of this Bitcoin lumpage in with that. What I found interesting was that in the congressional hearings, which were at the time of recording, was that yesterday? It feels like it's a long time ago.
Yes, it was yesterday. It does feel wasn't there 2 days of hearings? Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, there were a couple days of hearings, or there were a couple of rounds of hearings, a couple days and a couple of rounds. So yeah, it's over the past few days. It doesn't matter. But especially a couple of congressmen, McHenry and Davidson, and maybe a couple others, they really kind of spun this out as like trying, and this was really where Meltem approached this whole thing from, was differentiating Bitcoin from Libra and identifying the fact that Libra is not a cryptocurrency. It's just a centralized digital currency and that kind of stuff. So that was really interesting to me because it leaves an opening for Bitcoin to really avoid that big target, let Libra and Facebook take all of that. But there are some risks too, right? Like what's your overall take on this? I'm going to shut up for a second.
No, I agree. I mean, everything, it's all good. There's no such thing as bad press. Mentioning, like government officials mentioning it over and over again is a good thing. I think everybody, there aren't people who at this point, I think, who've never heard of Bitcoin. They might not know what it is, certainly, but I think, everybody's pretty much heard of it.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I mean, this was the first time I've had people, normal friends, like not in crypto, say like, hey, what do you think about this Libra situation? You know, because, I mean, everybody gets Trump's tweets, whether they want them or not. Like, they come in your life.
Well, I like it that for politically, it's both sides. Like, Facebook is more left-leaning, obviously, and big tech is left-leaning, so it's Libra. And then you have Trump, obviously, who's the bastion of the right. So all sides are coming together and talking about everything crypto-related, centralization and whatever, you know, so that's all good. So, yeah, I'm for it all. I'm just kind of ignoring it. I think at the end of the day, Libra can be whatever it wants to be because it's centralized. There isn't really like a decentralized governing body. There are like 23 or however many entities that are nodes or whatever. But, you know, the white paper is the white paper. But at the end of the day, they can just do whatever they want, really. I mean, that's my own viewpoint on the matter. But
yeah,
so they could do whatever song and dance in Congress. And then at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And the same thing with like tracking users. directly on Libra or the wallet Calibra or whatever, like Facebook, from their standpoint, I don't think it matters because they can just track the transactions, the spends or whatever. And then,
yeah, not a single person in the world can possibly believe that Facebook doesn't have a plan for a business model here, though.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's, yeah, it's kind of like cutting out the credit card companies.
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's their play towards trying to accomplish what WeCash accomplished in East Asia, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think it'll ever, I really don't think it'll ever launch in the United States. I just think, especially with the trust that the public opinion against Facebook right now and like the way trust in big tech is, I don't see it happening. Even on any political spectrum, like any side of it, the left doesn't like Facebook, the right doesn't like Facebook. Like, nobody likes Facebook right now.
It's one of the bipartisan things happening in the world, which is interesting. But yeah, so all that's going on, that's brought a lot of attention to Bitcoin, brought Bitcoin into the discussion. Something else I want to talk about news wise just while we're on it, Ray Dalio, someone I like a lot, came out with this article or note letter thing talking about how he basically sees the role of fiat currencies. Everybody's rates are going to be near zero over the coming decade, and he thinks that a different store of value than fiat currency, and he pointed towards gold and stuff, would be important. That's another enormously bullish macro thing for Bitcoin. Like, there's just a lot of stuff going on right now that I feel like the macro view is really, really good right now for Bitcoin.
But yeah, funny, I agree. You know, I'm not a doom and gloom guy, and I don't think you are either. But at some point, something's got to give. You know, it's like, we can't be negative or zero interest rates forever, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't even mean necessarily it's got to give to the point of catastrophe. Yeah. But like right now, the precious metals relative to markets, or you know, like those types of ratios, are at like all time levels that are ripe for correction. So I think that your risk off assets, your value assets, your, you know, however you want to look at all that stuff, like there is an environment that is ripe for, you know, non-growth equities to outperform growth equities, which hasn't really happened in the last decade. So
yeah, I think it's weird to see gold and S&P and Bitcoin, all this stuff, everything's moving up right now, which is weird.
Yeah, and there will be a divergence there, whether that means like gold gets shot back into the ground after it's trying to break out, or whether it means, you know, maybe equities start to sell off a little bit. I've heard some good arguments in terms of equities. Not that this is a, you know, global markets podcast, but I've heard some that say like, you know, well, global markets, a lot of other stock markets, for instance, really haven't gone and made new all-time highs, like the S&P 500, or if you even look at small caps, like the IWM ETF, Russell 2000, it hasn't made new all-time highs at the same time the S&P is. So some people theorize that money is just flowing into the best of the worst. So like, even though it's not like the perfect investment, it's, you know, the S&P 500 is safer than a lot of other things. So it's making new all-time highs despite not that great a sentiment. All of these things still point to me to risk off assets, and finding out if Bitcoin becomes a risk off asset from a currency perspective, especially potentially a bullish environment on the multi-year front.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we saw some of that already with the Fed talking about lowering rates again. I don't remember when that was exactly, but all of that is bullish for crypto, obviously.
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing too is we're seeing evidence of Bitcoin moving alongside, I don't know how temporary this is, but it's kind of moving alongside gold and somewhat silver. It's moving fairly inverse to the dollar right now, like on the intraday movements even, like in response to news and stuff. All that's super interesting to me. All that said, you know, we moved to what? Did we hit 13.9, something like that?
13.8, yeah.
We may have seen a pretty significant local top, so we'll dig into price in a minute. but before we do get to price, were there other news items that you wanted to cover? You talked about some Monero stuff. Why don't you dig into what you've been writing about?
Yeah, so I heard about this Monero thing the other day. So if you look at the Monero chart, it kind of like sold off on the BTC pair, which isn't like super unusual.
I noticed.
It's not super unusual in the setting of things currently based on what alts have been doing, but the fact that there was this bug that was so there was this bug that was known a while ago that was patched 4 months ago to I'm going to say a small group of people, you know, people on the Monero list. I don't think it was widely disseminated to everybody. Then it hits like a few other news websites, HackerOne, Cointelegraph, that basically you could send fake Monero to an exchange and it would register as real Monero on the exchange in the exchange wallet. Hmm. So what you could effectively do is sell fake Monero on an exchange. Now this has been patched. It's over. But what we don't know is how much Monero was sold while the exploit was live. You know, we also don't like it's not on chain. It's not an on chain issue. It's not like Zeek. Zeek had an inflation bug that to this day we still don't know. You know, how much was exploited, if at all. So there's this whole thing about like don't trust but verify. Okay, and my argument is, with both cases, we cannot verify what actually happened because of the nature of the ledger of these chains. So it is what it is. It's good, it's bad, whatever. But so that was why I brought it up in the article I wrote for Raven New Coin yesterday to talk about, like, this is what happened. You know, clearly there was some reaction seemingly to the news. Correlation isn't causation, but it dumped pretty hard like the day after the news, the day before the news came out. So I don't know. It didn't necessarily affect my long-term view on Monero, but it's important if you're a trader or a holder, you know, wondering what the hell's going on with price. Is like, is there something going on? It's like, there was, maybe not in the near term, but a while ago, there's certainly something going on.
Yeah, there was like a 25% drop relative to Bitcoin. At the same time, I think Bitcoin was dumping, and it was nasty. For Monero, and it broke through like several floors where it had been supported by, and it was like basically just reaching new levels of wrecked relative to Bitcoin. And
in the support currently on Monero, the BTC pair, they're like, if it makes a lower low, I think it's going much lower, so it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't. I gave up. I had tried to play this two or three times. Basically each of these floors it created, I was like, surely not another leg. So I like tried to play this and like barely escaped any of them. Basically it was brutal. I'm not trying to dance with Monero for now, and there's a lot of people that are like fundamentally bullish Monero for a long term, and it's been punishing you if you're participating in that. Really, any of these privacy coins, maybe with the exception of Grin having some really big days, but probably due to like a lack of general liquidity, because I think it only trades on like Polo and Bittrex.
So a bunch of coins XMR does have some good stuff coming. They have a new algorithm coming in October-ish, most likely. RandomX, it's been audited by two companies independently. It's going to basically prevent ASICs from mining on the chain and kind of only allow CPU mining. So we'll see how long that lasts, because every attempt at that so far by any chain has basically been futile. It hasn't been able to work. They also have their other version of having, they have a tail emission schedule for their release or whatever of Monero, but November 5th is when it's kind of like the technical having based on the initial start date. So there's that stuff for Monero. Grin had a hard fork a couple of days ago. Obviously LTC having August. ETC has a hard fork in September. EOS has a hard fork in September. ETH has a hard fork in October. Zeek has a hard fork in October. So there's a lot of stuff coming up this year besides the Monero stuff. And then obviously Bitcoin is next year, May halving, and then ETH 2.0 starts January-ish. So there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe here, Brian.
There is. And I keep thinking, like, surely we're starting to see some, altcoin bottom things. And then the floor just keeps falling out of them. are you getting to the point to where you're interested in altcoins, or are you in the camp of just staying the heck away?
Yeah, I haven't really played too many alts. I played like EOS, XLM, XRP, and Monero. That was a couple of weeks ago when Monero made the run to 120.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, definitely not on the BTC pairs, certainly. I'm more bearish than bullish on Bitcoin right now on a high time frame. So it's hard for me to be bullish on alts if I think Bitcoin's also going to drop a little bit here.
Yeah. One of the struggles I had with altcoins is like any day altcoins were gaining, it was just because they were losing a little less versus the dollar than Bitcoin was.
Exactly. So it's like, exactly.
Tether was the best altcoin pretty much during any up day for altcoins relative to BTC.
And there are so many people who have held since pre-April altcoins that are just losing value, losing opportunity costs, losing everything.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's honestly, it's hard to watch because I can just see the people who are getting slaughtered, like desperately calling for alt season over and over again.
Yeah. I was looking at the 200-week moving average on the total two on TradingView, which is like the alt market cap divided by Bitcoin. So it gives you kind of a dominance chart. Then that 200-week moving average that I'd been looking at, waiting for, talking about, it was like down week, down week, down week, down week, down week, and like blasted right through that 200. It meant nothing. So my basis below that was like new paradigm levels for Bitcoin dominance. So maybe that just means it's bottom things and it's time for alts to turn around, but it's been a rough go of it, that's for sure.
I can certainly understand people rotating into alts now that Bitcoin sort of made a little top, tippy top top, and things are, chilling out on the Bitcoin land.
Yeah.
So that I can understand a lot more than people who have like held through this entire run and are just hoping for an alt season desperately. Because to me, that just says any pop up on any of these alts is just going to get sold off again because all these people just want to get out.
Trying to exit.
They want to break even or they want to sell higher, a little bit higher, but at a loss. So,
yeah, I was looking at some of the less popular, what I would say were like 2017 alt flavors. Some of those, I look at the chart and it's like it could literally 10x and it still looks completely wrecked on its Bitcoin relative pair.
Yeah, a lot of these are, Zeke, bring that up again. Making all-time lows.
I tried to play several of these, and like even if I called a local bottom, it's like my take profit, which I would think was relatively conservative. It wasn't like I was calling for 2x's. I was looking at like here's a potential 30 or 40% gain, and it's like you said, there's always a seller as soon as there's a pop, and I was finding myself either having to take profit or like cut it back at break even when it retraced back on me, and any major resistance was sold just brutally, harshly, with no remorse. Like then it goes to make new lows.
Yeah, and we saw that on the ETH BTC pair, especially.
Oh, yeah.
It kept popping up and it just kept getting sold off. And then it finally broke that level 0.025 or whatever it was.
Yeah, roughly around that 0.025 level. And I'm curious your take on that because, usually you touch something four times or more, plus just the continuous lower highs on the top side. It just looked like it was ripe to fall through. Mm-hmm. My question is, do you make a full measured move on something like Ethereum and get into like the 0.01 territory where like an additional 50% retrace relative to Bitcoin? Because that would be a true brutal move for a person that's bullish Ethereum.
So like April 1st, it had ETH/BTC had this diamond reversal potentially, right? And it was right at the 200, like it looked pretty good. And then Bitcoin popped up the next day and it was just, that's it. It's been, it's been curtained since then. You know, it's just sold off over and over again. And it's just been below the 200.
Yeah.
This entire time. And I mean, if anything, up until mid June, it was recharged for a down move. And this is what we're seeing now.
Yeah.
So it's, to me, when I'm looking at the VPVR, like the support is at 0.2. If that doesn't hold, just like Monero, like it's going to go lower. Definitely 0.01 even is possible. You know, like it could get really ugly. What I'm seeing on ETH is a lot of the ICO treasuries are continually getting sold off or moved. So that adds additional pressure on the supply side. We're seeing fewer ICOs on Monero. On Ethereum, obviously, it's all about the IEO now. ICOs. Yeah, really, there's no ICOs on Ethereum relatively to what else is going on. You know, the exchanges realized that they could just do these IEOs, collect infinite amount of money, and the projects could just get auto-listed on exchanges. So that's like a match made in heaven. I mean, that was the biggest, the rate limiting factor was basically getting listed on an exchange.
Yeah.
These ICOs. So
you're taking Ethereum basically out of the equation, and you don't have to run Ethereum to have an Ethereum token. So it's like,
yeah,
or you don't have to hold Ethereum to have an Ethereum token. Yeah. If I just look at the Ethereum BTC chart, and granted, we are like, just this conversation is bottom things, but hey, it just keeps draining, and it gave up supports that were really important. And that's, to me, I just looking at Ethereum BTC weekly chart, 0.01 does not look like that far to go. Like, it looks like the type of area where you might find some true capitulation and be able to find a better entry.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of volume at this level, but I'm not a buyer here. There's no way. There's a little bit of a bull dip here as well, but I just don't see a massive upside right now with what we're seeing.
It is a huge, gigantic
VRPR. Oh, and the other thing with ETH is all the DeFi derivative stuff. You know, when ETH drops, it just gets pounded even harder because it's basically a long squeeze on all these derivatives, which are collateralized. So then there's more sell-off, there's more supply pressure. Like, it's in a bull market, this DeFi stuff is great because it just sucks up the supply. People can lever up, you know, whatever X amount, and the price just keeps going up. But when it goes down, it just gets punished even harder. And these are automatic liquidations. You know, these aren't like someone thinks about it and then like, oh yeah, you know, it's just sold. That's how it is. So
I interviewed Lewis from Wire.
Yeah.
Since we've talked, and I was trying to put him on the spot to say like, okay, well, what are people using this DeFi stuff for now? And like, one of the typical uses is to go long Ethereum. It's like, okay. I mean, I get some of the promise of it, but, and he made some good arguments. I'm not trying to downplay what he said. I'm just, the actual use cases that people are doing with it, they're like, okay, here's my 100 Ethereum. Now give me 180 Ethereum, or like whatever whatever they're allowed to get.
It's certainly not being used by the unbanked and underbanked. I mean, it's mostly speculation. It's not, it's very hobbyist stage. You know, it's like, there's a lot of education involved, I think, in getting onboarded with any of this stuff. So,
yeah. So there just seems to be a big decoupling between what fueled the massive 2017 run and kind of unwinding the fundamental hype, I guess. And subsequent, even more insane technical move up. So there's, I guess my hesitation would be that I think alts will run again. I totally think there'll be another time where alts pump.
The alts will rise again.
The alts will rise. It could very well be different coins. It may not be anything related to the Ethereum network. Like, it just might not be what people expect, you know?
Well, I guess like, kind of like Link. I mean,
yeah, people joke about like stuff people shill in your Twitters. And like, I was getting shilled anytime it was like I mentioned something about an altcoin, somebody responds, it's like Link, and it's like I have no idea what this is, never paid attention to it, and then I hear about it and it's like, oh yeah, this one 10x or 100x or something. Like, what the heck is Link? You know, it's a new party. That's how this game works.
Yeah, but there really have only been 5 alts that have outperformed BTC over the past year. Link is one of them, BNB is another one, and a bunch of like random other ones. But other than that, everything else has been demolished by Bitcoin's fierce run over the past year.
Yeah. And that's, people are afraid of the what Bitcoin can do to you, I guess. And because they've been punished, you know, like anytime you try to get into them, you just, if you are in there for very long at all, you get punished. So,
but I just don't understand the like mentality, the alt maximalist people's mentality, you know. I can't get behind it, and I don't understand. Like, Bitcoin's done so well for so long, why do you have to try to like scratch off a lottery ticket to,
well, like, I think 10x? Because I think people are looking for beta relative to Bitcoin, and the only ways to do that are trading it against something or trading it leveraged, and people get wrecked when they trade it leveraged, and they get wrecked when they trade it against something to try to get additional returns. Like, it's harder to convince yourself if you can afford 0.1 Bitcoin or whatever, you know, you bring your first $1,000 in, well, you want to turn that $1,000 into $100,000, and the only way to do that is to trade it for altcoins or trade it against itself with the dollar. And people are allured by that, and they've seen people do it in the past. You know, you look at these charts and you're like, look at that thing, what it did back then, and you hold on to that hope.
Or you could have just held, you could have just stacked
sats. Just stack and... sats. I knew you were going to say that.
I don't know. Maybe it's because that's how I started crypto. Just Bitcoin.
By stacking sats.
By stacking sats. I stuck sats before it was cool. Yes, I don't know. I just don't understand. I just, you know, you hate to see it, Brian. You hate to see it.
Well, and I agree with you in the sense that, like, somebody gets excited about crypto probably because they heard about Bitcoin, and then they dive into these other things seeking beta, and then
So I understand, like, the uneducated newly crypto person. I understand that.
You just don't understand someone that's been around the block.
Right. I don't understand someone who's been here for like 3 years, 4 years, who's like, all coins. It's like, why? Just, all you have to do is hold. Do literally anything else. Hold Bitcoin. You're fine.
I think it's because those people have had success. So I think people are driven by their own psychology and history. So if you've had a 50x altcoin move, that was your first time experiencing a win.
The siren song.
Yeah, then you're like, of course it'll happen again because it happened to me in 2016 or 2017 or whatever, you know, like whenever that happened. Now imagine if you did it like you stacked multiple 10x wins on top of each other, and you turned your $1,000 into, and then you became a millionaire at the top, you know?
Which a lot of people did.
Yeah, a lot of people did. And now it's like, now you're back to being a 100,000-aire. And you're like, oh no, I got to do it again so that I can be a 10-millionaire. And that'll happen. That'll totally happen. That's the psychology.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I guess I'm more risk averse and all about the sure thing. I don't know.
You're risk averse despite the exposure to crypto in general. So let's say you do want to play alts. This is something that I've been thinking about, something we've talked about a little bit. One of the ways that you can play altcoins would be, okay, I want some exposure to potential altcoin gains. I realize if Bitcoin goes up a lot and altcoins kind of float versus the dollar but get wrecked versus Bitcoin, but you know what? I'm willing to take a little bit of risk. You can use collateral in Bitcoin, and then you can only trade alt USD pairs, and you can trade those on derivatives, right? There's a handful of platforms where you can do that. That's one way you could do it, where you say, okay, well, I have exposure to Ethereum, but I only have exposure to Ethereum USD and my collateral is in BTC, etc. That's one way you could do it where you're not like super exposing yourself to not participating in a Bitcoin run. It's got its own dangers for sure from a risk management perspective, but that's one way.
I'm not trying to say like you can't make money trading alts. I'm just saying like, man, I don't know.
This conversation is so bottom things right now. Like
the opportunity cost though is just so huge. So huge. We're sitting in something and not rotating in and out. I don't know. It is bottom things, I agree. But even as we sit now, I'm looking at the BNB chart right now. And it's just even this one, I don't know.
Like, I'm bearish BNB. I don't know if you heard my bearish BNB thesis. I entered a competition about it. I talked about it in that episode with Aaron.
I'm bearish on Binance surviving another 6 months personally.
About from a regulatory perspective?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was the purpose of my bear thesis. Ari Paul's firm, whatever it's called, they did a competition and you could enter either a long or short thesis for any coin.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
And the winner gets 2 Bitcoin. And I'd been wanting to like iron out my short BNB thesis anyway. And I was like, every single person that submits something to this is gonna do some kind of like long shitcoin thesis. So I was like, how about a short BNB thesis? So I submitted that. We find out in a month if I win the Bitcoins. I'm assuming I will not. My thesis was as kind of a hedge towards your average hedge funds, like altcoin exposure, plus the regulatory risks for Binance.
It sounds like that whole project sounded like a way for them to get free TA from people or whatever, free analysis.
Sure. I don't care. I don't care. I wanted to get those thoughts out anyway, so yeah. I put it on paper. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out in the world that was what I did.
It's a world first. You're the Binance bear.
Binance bear. Now you can short Binance on Binance because they opened margin trading, and they just opened the BNB pairs this week. And CZ tweeted something like, "You can now trade margin BNB on Binance, but you better not short because you'll get wrecked," or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think you can actually take a sizable short of BNB on Binance without getting wrecked by them, there's just no way that they're not going to see that on the book and trade against you. There's just no way. They're going to say they're not. They're going to say they're honest. Look, they're good people. I know people at Binance. But there's just no way.
But they're going to make sure you get wrecked.
Yeah, obviously. Like, they're just, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So Bitcoin, though.
Yeah, let's talk about Bitcoin. Because you think Bitcoin is sitting at resistance at a local top. No new high coming before what number?
Well, look, I'm not going to say no new high before X day. my year-end target is 30,000, though. That's my year-end target.
Okay, not 33.
But no, it's 30, exactly. 29.99.
Okay.
No, so right now, it's like Q3 has historically been not good for Bitcoin. All of, not all price action, but a lot of the price action ever in Bitcoin's been sort of in between quarters, especially now with CME. Futures stuff's a lot more delineated in quarterly moves.
So we just hit H2.
What's that?
We just hit H2, or the second half of the year.
Oh. So I'm not expecting a massive quarter. I mean, we had a massive Q2. We usually have a better Q2 than Q3 or Q1. We also have really good Q4s. So I think we're going to chill for Q3. And then Q4, it's going to be Bull City, you know?
Yeah. And so Q4 last year, remember when everybody was like, Bitcoin Q4s are always awesome. And then that's when we bottomed out.
I was one of those people.
I know you were. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a historical record. It wasn't like a prediction. It was a, hey, this is what we've done before. So
right. That's what usually happens. It doesn't always happen. Doesn't mean it has to happen, but
Yeah.
So as far as like technicals on Bitcoin and what I'm looking at right now, like the daily to the 4 hour of the cloud doesn't look great for a long here. And when things start popping up above the cloud a little bit more, then you can get more excited about a long position. At least I will. But just as we said, I'm not seeing anything there's no pattern, there's no div. Obviously, we had a massive 12% day yesterday or something. Just kind of out of nowhere. So that was nice. Kind of like our down day, how we had a massive 12% down day on like the 16th. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not excited about being long here. I don't want to build a massive short here. I think it's okay to sit out. I think if you didn't make money in the Q2, like, what are you doing with your life? But so yeah, I think a lot of people are just sort of in the same boat. They're not like eager to like play this right now. Just want to see how it pans out. Sort of wait and see mode.
Yeah, I had shared a thing about how I think the place to seek like new speculative longs would be really over about 11.5, which is a weekly close and daily B bands. If I saw a daily close over 11.4, 11.5, to me, that's a sign that we're going to go and give a new shot towards the actual highs. Another cloud level, you know, we talked about going above a cloud and then bouncing off it, having a little bit of a response. Then we dipped back into the cloud, and actually, depending on which instrument you're looking at, we're actually hovering right into the cloud, top of the cloud resistance. And the weekly Keijin, this is on the weekly, and the weekly Keijin is around 8,500. And then there's a high volume node, not the 6,400 one, but another at around 7,958K that I like. So I've been of the opinion that 9,600 is probably not where we would stop if we make a proper down move, which we've begun, but we haven't necessarily completed. So I would think that we have another leg down. It's just not one I'm looking to short. It's one that I'd be looking to get long on once I felt like it bottomed.
Yeah, I think the worst case is breaking 85, breaking 65. Like, those are the worst cases. The best case for me would be to like load the boat would be 72 to 85 region, because 72, 74 is like the 200 on the daily. It's the 20 SMA on the weekly. 85 is the weekly Keijun. So these are all good levels. 88 is a median line of a massive pitchfork. So anything between 72 and 85, 88 even is fine for me.
By the way, we're also resting on the underside of the daily Keijin, if I'm looking correctly.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. I was looking at that a couple of days ago when we broke the daily Keijin and it didn't sort of bounce cleanly off of it. That was kind of the breaking point for me, where I was like, okay, the market just needs to pause and like gather itself, because there's no, you know, like the previous, so we had a massive Keijin bounce on the July 2nd. And we had that perfectly, like the wick touched, we got a nice rejection, dragonfly candle. You know, we didn't get that the other day. So at that point I was like, okay, you know, things are going to happen. It's going to be widely ranging. It's going to be volatile, but I don't feel comfortable trading it per se. So I just haven't really been trading much of it.
I just consider all this like a gigantic chop zone where if you can play these hourly charts and maybe 4 hour charts well, like great. But I mean, I'll wake up in the morning and then by the time I get back from dropping my kids off, we've moved like $300 or $400, but done nothing. You know?
Yeah. I mean, just today we bartered twice up and down.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you even think about taking a margin position on that? No thanks. You know,
I've been trying to think like, what does my macro positioning look like? And personally, the way I'm approaching this at the moment is I don't really want to be out on spot, because I feel like the recovery time, if we break that 79 to 8K range, to me, that's definitely a move towards fully back towards like 6K, 6,400. And I realized there's $2,500 between now and 8K. Mm-hmm. I think that $2,500 move might be fast if it happens, I guess. Right now I just want to seek what are my opportunities to find a proper long position. I'm not like looking to build into like a long-term short or anything like that, because yeah. I feel like the response off of wherever it finds support could be really, really fast and make some big wicks, which was very common. Kind of the last leg of down moves in 2017. Oftentimes they were that last 10% of a 30 or 40% correction happened in minutes, you know?
Yeah, definitely. There's even like a low time frame head and shoulder, inverted head and shoulders forming right now.
Yeah, I've been watching that. And it looks a lot like the one that broke up in a kind of weak fashion. Did you see?
I agree that if we linger below 88 for a long period of time, it probably won't be good. The daily cloud level is also at 88. So if we break that, you know, things can get ugly to the bear side. But yeah, I mean, I think just letting the market do its thing, watching it, I think over-trading this is definitely a dangerous thing you could be doing right now because of just the crazy volatility we're seeing.
Yeah. I know I had identified in some market analysis stuff that I was doing, like after the first trip sub 10K, we went to like 9,900. We responded pretty quickly back to, we got all the way almost to 11.1. And when I was doing a video, I was looking at that 10.8, 10.9 region and thinking like, okay, if you really want to like just risk off some, like this is where I would take some to fiat and, you know, chill for a bit. Now that we're recording right this moment around 10.5, I feel the same way. 10.5 to 11K. Like if you want to take some off the table, have some ready to buy the dip, that kind of thing, like not a bad place to do it from. And then if it goes back over 11.5, then that's kind of my sign of, hey, you missed $500 or $1,000 of the move there, but you risked off from having a down move from 10.5 to 8.5. So, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I think the downside is bigger than the upside right now, just because there's also a lot of resistance on the upside and all this volatility from people who are trapped up there looking to get out.
Yeah, I deleted all my pictures before we started recording, but I'd like put all these lines like this looks like resistance and this looks like resistance and this looks like resistance, and it's basically every $200 or $300 until you get to 11.5. And that's why I just settled on the fact that, like, okay, I mean, we just have resistance for the next $1,000, and it's hard to be too excited until I see above 11.5 on a daily close.
Yeah, or some sort of consolidation pattern that's sort of leans bullish in any way. Right now, it's just a blob. It's a mess. You know, again, I don't really see anything here other than the low time frame, head and shoulders. Like, there's no reversal pattern per se either. But there's just a lot of like random walk, bardiness going on right now.
Yeah. I was going to say one other level I've been enjoying is I put into my little toolbox that I have the monthly open, close, high and low. Mm-hmm. And the monthly close, prior monthly close, which we've used as levels several times this month already, was around 10.7, 10.750. And if I was looking for 11.5 even, I would say, okay, tackle 10.750. It's just like, but all of a sudden you just have these levels that are really hard to differentiate between, even though it's a large range.
Yeah. No, there's just a lot of stuff here, you know.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't talk about that a lot of people have been talking about is the amount of Tether that's been minted, printed, or migrated lately. So we're up to 4 billion.
Four billion
the other day. We were at 3 billion.
Really?
It's like April something. We were at 3 billion right when the New York AG thing hit. We broke 3.2 or something.
So that's money on the sidelines ready to buy, right?
Well, there's a bit of a divergence there, you know? So a lot of money in stablecoins right now. Even the USDC, it broke some important historical high as far as circulation. So there's a lot of big money coming in. It's got to go somewhere. It's certainly more bullish than seeing it get burned or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that would say that money's leaving. You could also say that people are fleeing to stable coins instead of leaving, which is also more bullish than bearish, but it doesn't necessarily say that we're going to like pop up just because we printed a bunch of Tether. Like people just might be hedging their bets here. So I don't know, but on balance, I think it's more bullish than bearish, certainly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did not catch that. Before we go, I have got to play this video, if people did not hear it already, where a congressman asked Meltem about shitcoins. I put it on YouTube. I'm going to play it back on how people would for you. The two.
About Bitcoin and about the immutable distributed ledger.
Can you hear that?
Benefits of that decentralization.
I cannot. No.
Centralization.
Okay. Well, it'll be on here in a second. The audience can hear it.
You know, a lot of people in this space will use a phrase that you may be familiar with. There's Bitcoin and then there's shitcoin. Are you familiar with that phrase and what people might mean by that?
I am.
So could you
So Meltem's face after she says, I am, and, as in being familiar with the term, was incredible. And yeah, I'm amazed by that being in the congressional record now and something that was said on television. Did that spark anything in you?
I mean, I was surprised at how informed Congress people seem to be lately on crypto things. I don't know.
Shout
if
out
like,
Coin Center.
Yeah, I don't know if that's Coin Center's doing or if it's some other lobbying group or just millennials staffers talking, you know, talking to their Congress people, getting educated. Again, it's all good. You know, the more people know, the better.
All press is good press.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to finish that. Finish with that and bring it in. He said it again too, which was great. Josh, what else are you thinking about? Is there anything else you want to bring up before we head out?
Not really. I just kind of been enjoying my summer lately, enjoying the lack of trading setups. You know, just it's nice to take a breather every once in a while from trading, I think.
Yeah, I haven't been like super into trading setups with crypto. I've been doing a little bit of trading in equities for the first time in a while, and I'm bullish silver, maybe to my eventual dismay, but so far it's working out nicely. There was a gigantic break up from a level, and I was really pleased when I saw the Ray Dalio thing as well. So it's at resistance now, but the way silver and gold have been moving has been fascinating to me. So I've been enjoying that.
Good.
Very non-crypto.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You know, I think we all need a break every once in a while.
Yeah, I didn't do enough of that in the last bull market or even worse in the bear market. I was like, through the 6 months of consolidated crap, I was like paying attention every day, which I shouldn't have.
Yeah, it's definitely mentally draining for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll leave it there. Next week, I fully expect Bitcoin to be at 13K and altcoins to have all gone up 50% in response to our bottom things episode.
Yeah, totally.
If people want to catch up with you, they need to go to bravenewcoin.com. Follow you on Twitter at Carpe Noctem. Thank you to Brave New Coin for being a partner for this episode. Go sign up for their newsletter. That's our pitch for
there
today.
Go
catch that Brave New Coin newsletter. There's a subscribe button right there on the homepage. Thanks to them for being a partner. Thanks to you, Josh, for coming on and chatting with me. Go to ledgerstatus.com for more, and we will catch you next time.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river just run dry in a house of cards. I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely